Welcome to the PowerXL podcast channel. I'm Bev Hope, Marketing Strategy Director at PowerXL, and I'm delighted to be your host for this episode. We are returning to our episode on expanding patient access to evolving testing capabilities in precision oncology. And this is part three. I'm joined by my two special colleagues, Dr. Gwen Bebb, Senior Vice President and Global Therapeutic Head of Oncology, and Wyatt Gotbetter, Senior Vice President, Worldwide Access Consulting. Together, Dr. Bebb and Mr. Gotbetter have been discussing in detail the rapidly expanding testing capabilities and their impact on the development of precision oncology and the benefits of integrating multi-omic data. And today, we're going to turn the attention to discussing the challenges and the opportunities that lie ahead. So I'd like to turn my first question back to Gwen. So please share from your perspective what advancements in data, machine learning, and testing capabilities are on the horizon in precision oncology.
That's a great question, and one that's actually very vexing in some ways. AI and machine learning is touching many aspects of our lives, and clinical development of new drugs is certainly one of them. Let's start by looking at the data collection that we've alluded to several times already. We're seeing a much larger number of genes being analyzed routinely. We're talking about the incorporation of other omics into the patient's testing algorithm before treatment decisions are made. These create extra layers of data that have to be analyzed. When we add on that the possibility of doing things like single cell sequencing of individual tumors, we're multiplying that by another several orders of magnitude again. So we're seeing the possibility here of having a massive aggregate of data that we need to somehow analyze and use it to inform us on how best to advance the cause of precision medicine. When you add to the other concept that the cells that kill our patients are not the ones with which they're diagnosed, we encounter yet another challenge. In order to better understand the cancer and really highlight how precise we can be, we need to track the evolution of the tumor over time. So there are a variety of techniques that allow us to do that, whether it's imaging or whether it's cell-free DNA testing, for example. But it does allow us to do all those testings that we've already described several times during a patient's clinical disease experience. So all of a sudden, the amount of data that we're talking about collecting is just enormous. And this, I think, is the opportunity for AI and machine learning to come in. These are capabilities that seem to be really at home with massive sets of data that are probably beyond individual humans' ability to analyze. And I think incorporating those capabilities responsibly will greatly aid the development of precision oncology. The other aspect that I think AI is going to contribute to is actually in analyzing the chemical reactions and behavior of individual molecules to highlight structural elements of those molecules that can be better targeted. I think that is a really exciting possibility, has already reaped dividends in some of these previously labeled undruggable targets. And finally, I think the very structure of monoclonal antibodies and other large biological molecules is very complex, and predicting which structures are best developed to target surface antigens on cells is yet another aspect that AI can contribute to. So I think, you know, these are not just thoughts that are permeating my brain. They're thoughts that are out there in the field that sponsors are using to advance the development of their own assets. And certainly in clinical trial design and the incorporation of real-world evidence, I think there's a lot of excitement about what this capability can allow us to do with all these testing capabilities that have recently evolved.
Thank you, Gwen. So that brings me to Wyatt. So Wyatt, I would like you to share the roles that the payers and the healthcare providers play in ensuring patients have access to these coming advancements in precision oncology. And I'd like you to also mention what we see coming with advancements in combination therapies.
There are more and more tests that provide insights into more and more aspects of our DNA and the genome. And I have the utmost respect and live in awe of clinicians who can keep track of all of the data that's out there, all of the literature, all of the studies. AI is increasingly playing a role in clinical decision support. The electronic systems that are available to clinicians, available to hospitals to help them take this diagnostic information and make sense of it and to make sure that the patient gets the right care. And this goes back to assimilating and analyzing data. As Gwyn said, it's tools that support radiologists in imaging and tumor grading and so on. So I think the role of AI in clinical care and in supporting clinicians is also an incredibly important area to round this out. Now, I think the role of clinicians is, of course, paramount, right? They have the knowledge, they have the ethical and legal responsibility to diagnose and to recommend and prescribe the right treatments or surgery, as the case may be, to assist the patient. We live in an era now for many decades of quote-unquote evidence-based medicine, so these decisions should be rational and based upon the best possible evidence. So everything that we've talked about here, proper diagnosis, proper clinical trials, real-world evidence that support and bolster and maybe sometimes refute those clinical trials are really all part of that evidence base. Now, we also know that clinicians need to really have a voice with payers. If they believe that a patient should have access to a given regimen and perhaps their health system, the formulary or pharmacy and therapeutics committee at their hospital isn't providing ready access to that, they have a voice and influence and advocacy in that. And that same type of influence and advocacy also extends to payers. Payers are reviewing the evidence, but perhaps they're not always the first ones to say, we want to pay for this. Now, maybe they feel the evidence is inadequate. Maybe a drug has been approved too recently. Maybe they just want to avoid the cost for that moment. There may be many reasons behind that, but it really requires not just the data, but I think the influence and passion of these stakeholders to make sure, once again, that we're fulfilling that goal of the right patient getting the right therapy on time.
You know, we could keep going. This is such a complex topic, and this has been such an insightful, helpful conversation. But I'd like to just pause and just ask each of you for your key takeaway from this discussion about patient access to expanding testing capabilities.
I can start there, Bev. What I would say as a takeaway is that the vision of precision oncology may seem tainted to some patients' experience. Not all patients have an actionable biomarker. In fact, the majority of patients do not have an actionable biomarker right now. Those patients may feel that the vision of precision oncology has bypassed them. And even for those with an actionable biomarker, the fact that there is a drug that can hit that particular target does not denote cure in the vast majority of cases. And yet, I would say that the vision of precision oncology, although not completely realized yet, is still there on the horizon as something that is something we should pursue. And with the development and increased understanding of a broader range of biomarkers, and with increased demonstration that using these biomarkers as the platform for precision oncology, demonstrating better outcomes, it is likely that we will get increased funding for that kind of intervention and make the whole vision of precision oncology more realizable to a broader range of patients. The patient, of course, is the key player in all of this. Vision is there because of the patient, and what we have achieved so far is also there because of the patient's willingness to participate in research, to donate their samples, to be prepared for disappointments very often when those testing don't actually provide another avenue of treatment. So I would like to say, let's persevere with the vision. Let's encourage increased participation. Let's make clinical research more available to more people, thereby increasing its applicability.
Perfect. So Wyatt, I'll turn to you.
I think that is the absolute right message and sentiment for us to end up this endeavor of drug discovery, clinical research, developing better tools for diagnosis, developing, of course, better therapies. We're all about the patient, right? To extend life, to extend healthy life that's of high quality, that's of high productivity is really, I think, what brings us together in the clinical research field, the health economics field, certainly the many biotechs and pharmaceutical companies that we work with. So I think that is the message for patients to remain hopeful, to remain optimistic. I think compared to 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago, so many different cancer diagnoses today have really strong survival rates. Of course, many still do not, and there's work to be done. But I think if we look at the progress that's been made and the tools that are available to us, and I would argue the rate of progress is truly accelerating, that's something we should all feel good about.
Oh, thank you so much. We've all mentioned that everyone is touched by cancer. And I just want to, you know, share that I too have been touched by cancer. I'm a widow from going through the cancer journey with my late husband. He suffered from non-small cell lung cancer at a very young age. And it was the dawn of precision oncology therapies. He was not able to get access to testing and to get access to therapy really until the very end of his stage 4 lung cancer journey. So he did not benefit. But at the time, we had hope. We really believed that it could affect his life. He could live a little bit longer. But for me personally, being involved in advancing precision oncology, it's part of my own mission. It is something that I've been passionate about in my career. And I'm particularly passionate about it now working with Gwen and Wyatt. It takes so many people to advocate for change. And we have many patients that we work with in our patient advocacy groups. And we have many people at ParkCell who are either cancer patients themselves or who are dealing with a family member who has cancer and who's, you know, currently in treatment. So it's something that we do take personally. We deeply care. And I just wanted to share that, you know, I have that deep care to help patients in the future so that they will have a better patient outcome, that they will have possibilities that were not available when my husband was going through treatment. We have to hold on to hope. That's what we're here for. We're here to hold on for hope and to advance what's possible so that patients' lives can be changed. Gwen and Wyatt, thank you again for your excellent insights and for sharing your passion for advancing access to biomarkers. Realizing the vision of precision oncology and improved patient outcomes is dependent on patient access to biomarkers. It's a very complex topic that will continue to evolve as new precision oncology therapies move through the pipeline. So we are going to continue to revisit it throughout our podcast series. For our listeners, thank you for your time today. We hope that you'll continually check out our future episodes of the ParkCell podcast. And importantly, on the topic of advancing precision oncology and advancing access to biomarkers, please check out our New Medicines Novel Insights report on our ParkCell.com website.